funny, but yeah, we'll see.
No, that's a good complaint, you can so on. So, but let's get all these facts before today. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it looks like the 31st is difficult to move away from. Okay. Yes, so we might have to continue interviewing 3 to 4 candidates on the Friday morning before we looks like we're getting to I'm not sure if there are any other housekeeping matters. Whether members have gone through the CV that you received yesterday. If you've gone through it, we don't have to pronounce ourselves immediately now, unless you want to do that once you're waiting. As to what you want us to do. You want us to interview the candidates or members of the commission so that we can also take up for this.
Yes, I thought you were an impressive young
lady. You have to press.
I thought you were an impressive young lady, but she doesn't bring anything particularly clever to the start. She must have been offering in terms of experience so that her team feels
were as good as the
other
candidates,
and
therefore I'm suggesting
anyone else?
Well, I think in a nutshell, the ISB would not have shortlisted initially in our initial now we are only going to do 4. So it is possible to finish us.
We are going to do 4.
Yeah, we are going to do 4. And I'm not sure if we just try and study the mind of the back of the mind. So that we only do the 4.
Mm-hmm.
But the only difficulty there is that, not difficulty, just observation from yesterday. You hear him with the full day. And it's a coin. Board members, and I know that you are taking very long. So, just bring this to our attention, but let's not spend our time on it now. Only for the word of our own time, we can come to this. But before you can.
That's what I would suggest, that, well, obviously, this was supposed to be a little bit of training issue. That's what we could do. We can shop them. Stay interview on the 31st, but get a comfortable date where we can have a proper conversation.
And you're assuming they're available?
No, let's do that.
The thing is, they're available on
the
day.
We have our guests and nothing here to interview. If you start sending signals that they are those that you are to call, Welcome. And not you know the girl. Remember that you said that we just address you for that. You are one of those candidates who was shortlisted for the ICC. We currently have 37 members for nominations that for nominees that are going to we were just deciding about one that we were pretty sure about. It might remain 37, but it's going to be 36 depending on what goes on there. The Parliament requires us to shortlist up to or down to 12 non-legislative board members. Our plan is to finish just by the 7th of September. Because, I mean, the interviewing and being here is the same. It is not possible around the 11th. And the reason being that Parliament is going to recess in the next 3 weeks, so we want to conclude this matter before it. So I can only for now wish you well and say that we are going to be here. Because not everyone knows who we are, we just have a point to your community for the country. Just to introduce yourself, what do you want us to know about you? I'll give you 3 minutes to do that. And the other 2 minutes, try to convert us into why you, among these 3 things, take care of you, consider you what you turn the radio pressure button, and when you're done,
okay, I suppose a very brief background, which I can do in less than 3 minutes. Started off as a journalist, working in both print and radio. Never for SABC in those days. But I was freelance journalist for BBC Ireland and something called NPR in the US. Was then part of the Journalist Union, the Association of Democratic Journalists, which was all before 1990. Through that was part of looking at policies and developing what we call the charter for public broadcasting and broadcasting South Africa. I worked for a magazine called Speak Magazine, which was aimed at women who didn't speak English, working class women. From there, got involved in journalism training, radio training. SABC the community radio sector, which I was also active in at that time. Then I was elected to be a councillor on the Internet Broadcasting Authority, and was one of the councillors from the IBA chosen to help go into the first council of ICASA. After that I worked for a year for myself. I suppose one of the relevant things that I did then was SABC in developing language policies. The policies in terms of acts that were required to develop education, language, and universal service agency policies. Universal service access is what I was part of. I then was made the CEO of the Media Development and Diversity Agency, which I always said I would only help establish in my contract for 2 years, and I left it after the first 3 years. And I'm now again working for myself, doing a range of things, both in media and in other areas. That's a quick summary.
Okay.
I'm not sure what reason that I want you to consider me for appointment, because I think choosing to be listed with SABC board is a public service, it's not a job. I think we've got many good applicants to choose a very strong board. I think depending, and you have to balance the range of skills that you have on that board. I think some of the skills that I have come from the journalism side, come from the regulatory and policy side, I've been involved in that. And also understanding governance and finance. I mean, having been the CEO of a public entity, I understand the public finance management that very well. We did get that in order during that time. And I think I really think it's up to you. You need to balance those skills. And I think Timothy is very capable of that. Sell themselves as it's not a job, which is a public service and a public duty. I think everyone is elected to do so. You know, it's it's something you need to do quite a lot of humility. If you are serving the public, that's beautiful.
You've been very modest. Okay, if you want to keep it that way, I was trying you to make, try to get you to make our joke easy. You see, but it's alright.
I think your name suggested itself to us, not only because you got those two orders to the MDBA, but you instilled confidence. The way you, all of you, both you as the CEO ran the MDBA, we always would feel as with confidence that things were being done correctly. And that is exactly what I think one seeks to now achieve for the public broadcast. The terrain on which some ground has been lost. So from my side, that's why I would be really interested in considering it. May I ask you now on some of the other things that you've been involved in? That period when you worked on the language policy at the ABC, was it at the time when our minister was the, in fact, chairman of the board at the ABC? Was it that period? No, was it later than that? Because I think there was a kind of a false start. I remember a time when all of us as political parties during Ivy's day worked on the first language policy. There were some good ideas, but then I remember distinctly a time when multilingualism was neglected, the whole approach was involved, and before that was really changed. Would you like to give us any of your impressions or ideas on language diversity on the public school after now, when we see the news in far more languages?
I think it was in the year 2000 that I did the language study. So just after the Broadcasting Act had been put in place. And I was called in not only to help them draft the code, which then went out for public comment. It was a very public project, as required by that. But to actually do a review of what had worked from the very first language policy that they had, and what hadn't, and why. So I think from that point, Peter McLary was there in the year. So I think from that point, there was clearly, as I remember the report that I wrote, that was reviewing it before looking at the code. There were problems, like you're saying. McKinsey had come in, and essentially what it meant was that the McKinsey report did save money. How you save money was on a lot of local production, anything that costs a lot of money. You got rid of even things like subtitling. The subtitling department that they said it's no longer existed, I found in that study. But there was a great deal, and there still are, of commitment amongst people working for the SABC to achieving that third language, the language objective. Through that process, and it was consulting with all the SABC, but then also my job was as an independent business, for example, the PANSAL, you know, was consulted for LSES, because they had been very active in criticizing language at the portfolio committee. And also there was a break, and what I emphasize in the report to the SABC is, instead of seeing people as attacking them, all those people wanted to come in and help. You know, they had resources, and people, yes, are critical of the SABC, but often it's from a perspective. Certainly with something like the Pan South African Language Board is saying, we've got resources, draw on us, and let us make language a real issue. Pan South had done some very interesting studies at that time showing how little people who even said that they understood English well actually understood of an English language news broadcast, and it was minimal. It was like 15% that they really understood and listened to a news broadcast in English. So the final code that we came up with, really, a lot of it was reinforcing the original code, but finding ways to make sure that it would be implemented, because the original code was good. It was done under Winslow, like Lucky Cecilia was the CEO. It was a very strong language code. Some things were put there was new technology, so the need to investigate new technology as a means of delivering on the language mandate came through more strongly than it had in 1994, when they hadn't been so aware. But it really was, I think the primary thing was that, one, radio, you treat them equally, because you can. It's equitable treatment of all languages on TV. And at that time, they already started pushing the plan to introduce news broadcasts in what are very marginal languages, you know, recognized by PANSALP and government as Tuvenda, Xitsonga, that are more marginalized than others. And using a term that I learned only through doing the language study, cognate languages, as a means of ensuring that everyone got information. And we've seen a great improvement, a great lot more drama programming, other programming happening in the different languages since then. I think my one, because I know one of my recommendations was, and I still think that it would be a good idea, is that you needed to define very carefully, and it became clear that it wasn't distinct at that time. The different roles of management and the board is such a process in developing implementation plans and monitoring, and that the board needs to play a very strong monitoring role through that in all policies, particularly language. And that's an idea that comes from both India, that has to broadcast in 13 languages, and the UK, who have emphasized that not the language programming, but in order to ensure that all regions of the UK are treated equally by the BBC. If you're not going to look at the number of minutes that you have of programming, drama programming in different languages or covering different regions, in order to make sure it's really fair, that the budget and the monitoring to Parliament and the annual report should be on what percentage of your budget, of your programming budget, is spent. Because then you can ensure that when you're doing drama, you're doing quality drama. You're not just producing drama cheaply, which was often the accusation then about some of the, particularly if you talk to programs, you know, they were saying these are cheap dramas. So yes, there's drama, but it's done so badly, it's not valid. So I think the SABC has implemented a lot on its language policy. I think the Broadcasting Act and the Code, you know, that was imposed on them, that they had to review every 5 years, has helped sharpen the awareness of the mandate. But I think the other thing that we found is a lot of outside people. So is it needs to clarify what its role is in language? Is it to reflect the languages, or is it to be part of developing all languages and so on? And that was unclear. That role, you know, was unclear to them, and some people have different expectations than others. And if they don't clarify those expectations, it's always going to be people that are saying that they aren't doing what they're supposed to do. But a different expectation of it. As well as that, it came up quite strongly from the news then, and I'm saying it here in Parliament, that they were saying sometimes the SABC is the one blamed for the fact that languages aren't treated equitably, when it's actually the whole of society that's not treating all languages with equal dignity. And the SABC is an easy scapegoat. And journalists described to me how, for example, and this happens to be about parliamentarians, they said, did not want to be have stories on the any other language other than English language news, even if they could speak other languages. And they were saying it's very hard if we've got to pursue the language mandate when we're finding that people only want to be reflected and will only be interviewed in English. And that's an issue that they're facing. I think some of that's gone as well now. And it's interesting because actually the least viewership is the English news. But for some reason, it's perceived as being more important. And it's not only by politicians, it's generally. So the issue is complex of language, much more complex than I thought when I went into this.
That was a very complex
Thank you. I'd like to preface my questions to you. It was an interesting quote in today's Business Day, Victoria Academic Youngson. It's quoted in fact by Steve O'Shea, saying, I've often taken the viewpoint that criticism is not the opposite of criticism. That indeed criticism is for me a deep intellectual commitment to develop change permitting world transformation. It's in that context that I'm asking this, because this committee in its various forms over the years have called you to public service and indeed other bodies. So it's with that in mind that I want to ask you to with your insight into public service, as you have done with the CASA, the huge problem there, before that the IBA, you've had insights into the SABC. So I'd like to, and knowing what we know of the job that has to be done now in these busy people, I'd like to hear from you your insight into to this kind of public service in terms of relationships with government and the assistance and the political experience of any that you have experienced, and how you would now move into the FABC given the kind of problems that are either real or perceived, and your views and what needs to be done. Thank you.
There's a lot of questions, and I think it depends on the nature of the criticism with a showing of commitment, because I think often it is. People believe that the FABC belongs to them, and I'm sure as parliamentarians, when you go into constituencies, you will hear endless complaints about the FABC, whether it's that they don't receive the service clearly, not only about programs. And that shows us that people do see it as our FABC, which is something you'd feel worried if people just started forgetting about it. You know, I'm not expecting to get it, I'm not expecting much of it. So to me, the fact that people are interested and passionate about the FABC and feel that it's there, and that's a very good thing. And I think actually that has grown recently, in that people have always felt strongly about it. But I do think that the FABC, despite all the problems that have been listed in the media, through that period of doing the code, has gone out a lot more to the public and asked their opinion, you know, about things. From that code process, she wasn't trying to match what they actually started hearing. But I saw in their last annual report, you know, they again had a series of reactions to what the FABC has done. Not some people like me, but going out into the people that listen and watch, ordinary people. And therefore, making people feel that they've got it safe, but at the same time, we have to be prepared for the fact that they're going to criticize. We all do. I think we all criticize things that we love, in a way, you know, or want. And people feel they own it. In terms of whether I've ever experienced my previous job in a critical experience, no. I've never had any call from any politician or person meeting. There, of course, have been times, never from politicians. I mean, there of course are different things that you have to weigh up. And it's equally true from the commercial side. I mean, and it's not a direct phone call, it's not anything, you know, that obvious. You know, but there's, we're just talking of this is going to kill our business. It happens on both sides. And I think the SABC, the way it also calls for that, advertising. The fact that it's got to derive most of its income from advertising, and therefore has to move to advertising, is an equal issue around what's being said to be political interference. But again, I don't know whether they ever received a call. I've worked as a journalist for many years. I've never had someone tell me what to do with the story. It can be much more subtle than that. And I'm sure those people that you're interviewing or work with were new can talk about it. That happened around the pressure from advertisers, from politicians across the political spectrum, you know, across wherever. And actually, you come to realize as a journalist that it's also their job, any political party's job to try and get their story done, any company's job to try and make sure that their version of the story is told. What you need is sufficient skills and cynicism in a way to be able to see through that, you know what I mean, and realize what's behind it, if you're working as a journalist. In terms of the problems at the FABC, I think there's one broad problem that I want to raise that came out in a language study and comes across everywhere, but this is about this particular FABC. The FABC has been through a huge number of leadership changes over the last 13 years. It's had, I can remember at least five CEOs, there might be others, you know, including Paxton White. It's had board changes. Every time there's been a total change in leadership, it's been almost as if there's a sense that you've got to reinvent the wheel and start from scratch. And I think that's difficult. You have an activity report. A new board and new CEO came and they threw out that. They came and they drew in the Gemini consultants. You know, they threw out McKinsey and then came with the, I don't know what's happened to the Gemini report. But certainly it's an issue. It creates a feeling of instability amongst those working at the SABC of not being aware of it. part of it is, I think that in throwing out the whole board at one time, I might think past the model. You know, where you've got some continuity, where certain people go and certain stay. I think that's a problem, that you change and can potentially get a whole new, you know, group of people who've got to learn again. And often, I think by the end of their term is when people have started learning. There isn't that continuity. So that's a broad problem that I don't know what can be done about because it is the legislation, but it is an issue. You see, CEOs need to also change as boards change. You know, Peter McLeary came under one board, he left and he had double profit. I mean, it's a real issue. Other problems with the SABC. I think there's a number. I mean, you're getting things like the scandal that's happened at the moment around the head of legal. I don't think that it's been said, but it happened. I don't think that it's been reported in the media as a victimization by other media.
No.
SABC commands so much of the ad spend. I think it's 66% of the television ad spend. They're not stressed by that. But I think that the epidemic in SABC is always going to be looked at a lot, and it's because people perceive it as our SABC. And it requires, you need to go in there and be aware of that. And be aware that you're going to do things and you're going to be criticized, and that's okay, that's other people's opinion. Because people perceive it, it is our public broadcaster. And something that we all feel some ownership, and in a way, all feel I've probably got an opinion of how the SABC should go different than others. You know, I think that in a way we haven't properly defined what we are thinking about public boards. I think that answers it.
Well, not really. My question really was, you know, on the RDA and on the CASA, now with the SABC, there is a direct government relationship there. And really my question was, how happy have you been with those direct government relationships?
our relationship in terms of IDA and CASA, our relationship was complex. We were appointed by Parliament to Parliament only at a different time than I was at CASA, many as well. And we worked, I never felt that I was interested with all, and we did, we took stands on things that either some political parties or the ruling party didn't want to do it. That we were allowed to do that. That's, you know, we were given the scope to do that. Of course, we did the same. But that's during the time of the IMF process. And certainly at the NDDA, at the NDDA, I think it's very extreme for people that complained about some of our decisions to the minister. And I know that he would tell them to be copy me with this response, so he would be completely shut out of the NDDA's judgment. You know what I mean? So there was no. The fact that you got. And GCI was always incredibly supportive. But it wasn't ever interference in our decision making, which must be independent. Of course, if we were doing something, if we were stealing money, I think that's something we should do. Can't get into something else. That's the role that they should have. We're going to oversight and administer the role of our finance minister. The decision you've been chosen because you've got some expertise in it to make. But perhaps I've been lucky.
I think also it's a very broad concept that doing political intervention. It depends where you stand. You can define it as whether there is interference or not. Mm-hmm. If you want to take it to the very lowest level. But I think also the point that you're raising about political interference, counterbalancing, also conventions in the process, is sometimes something that is very much wrong. From where we are seated, I can tell you, just to clarify this. We constantly feel that when it comes to the end of the ball, the castle, and also we've done some research when we were the other routes as well, these problems do come up. So whether they are orchestrated or they are just real, I'm not sure. And I don't want you to respond to that. You want to respond to that? Maybe you should, just maybe to give us your own.
Yes.
Please go ahead.
I mean, I think what you're talking about is, I read a lot about it, and it's something I was very conscious of coming to the end of my term, and I don't think it's needs, I think it's something Parliament needs to think, and that's why I like to look at it, because I do think that when people, I know I made a conscious decision, and I would never expect anyone else to do that, to work for myself after the CASA, and therefore not to work for any of the big operators. The stretching, I think, there has been a study done in Canada, if you're interested in reading studies, on how much unconsciously the fact that you're going to be out of a job can affect whether you're going to make an unpopular decision. I read that study, you know, in my last ones, I was probably, I hope, not overcompensating, you know, because you can do the same if you're conscious of it. But it's not something conscious, but if you've got a major decision and the industry is going to be upset with you, are you likely to take that in your last 6 months when potentially you'll be looking for a job with them? And it can be totally unconscious. And I think that's where that cooling off period, that it has to be paid. If you're going to do a cooling off period. I know it's come up in recent studies again. Because you can't, you want to take people from the industry. From the industry into, you know, some a body like ICASA, because you want to have them, give them that experience. And if they serve their term and then are not allowed to work for 6 months, you know, you can't expect that of them. You would need to in some way, yeah, you won't get them in the first place. And I think I was lucky because I've done so many other things. I was able to, for myself, do work that I, you know, that they didn't put me in a position where the fact that I might know even how a council would decide. Because you know that, you know, and therefore advantage someone. I wasn't put in that position. And I'm not sure there's a direct conflict, but I think that unconscious thing of I'm going to be looking for a job amongst these people that I'm now making some decision on, I think that's something that needs to be looked at. And it wouldn't be consciously doing something to please them. I'll give you that.
No, thanks. Rita will follow up for this. Thanks for that. As an experienced generalist, you see, if you can just, sometimes we're sitting here thinking that some of the generalists are doing very well in the country, and some are, you know, not doing that well. The officers are behind us, and some countries are going away. We'll be going to elections in 2009, so I might be nice to them. As somebody who has been doing training, are you responsible for some of the bad luck?
There's a kind of ethics with government, generally.
Still, I wanted to give you your own profile of what you see happening.
In journalism at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, one, I think that the whole country has always been very tight and regular. I'm not talking about the council or the idea of the other. Fact that there's been a code, either a self-regulatory or not, because I'm still by that. So people can have been able to complain to either the DMCC, which is now the CCC, or the DCCSA. And it's not only about journalism and ethics that people complain. When on TV, it's often about what they see as porn on ETV. You know, it's all sorts of things. And it's been very prominent on broadcast of how you can complain. The press has had a press ombudsman for a long time, and this is very much a personal position because I think it's changed now. But I did do for a whole lot of static regulators a talk on how introducing gender into media ethics. Recently, I looked a bit at our press ombudsman. It's a self-regulatory body, but certainly on the website, it's code on gender issues, which was quite sensitive. And it wasn't that well known. There are certain people you have to complain to this on the scene and not others. And I raised with some of the editors in the need to ensure that the press ombudsman was people knew about it as much as they knew about the DCCSA, and took complaining that there was a real process in which quality codes had been consulted, not just drafted by and based on international standards and codes, but the public sector that had been saying. And certainly now, I think, we've got a whole new press on the office, and they're talking about being more transparent about their codes. And I think, I think that will ensure that the public are more aware of when they feel infringed, how they can complain and have independent opinions. Bad journalists personally would get kicked out of the region. Nothing that does happen. So if you're inaccurate or if you misspell names or mispronounce them in broadcasting, because that's a real issue. The same as having a name is spelled if you don't check your facts. Those are the basic rules of journalism. I think if we're talking about what bad journalism is like now, I would probably take another look at one of my problems is that we don't get enough investigative documentary journalism at the moment. Things going below just the facts. And part of that is, and I know it's your journey, because it's newsroom is far more faithful. You don't give, like some people do, if you look at the major investigations, like the citizen and its ownership years ago. The journalists are giving so much effort on that story, you know, and explore and expand and be able to go down into it. Newspapers and sports structures are run more and more like businesses, which doesn't make it easy for journalists on them, but in a way they see as producing a product in order to make money rather than advertising it being seen as supplementary to the cost. I don't know if that answers your question. Yeah.
No, it does. Thank you very much. I'm just trying to encourage journalists to do more. And to know that there is something called level of supply
investigating
more. In the corner of the country, sometimes, you see. We used to use it many years ago. People who did a bad job. When there were incidents in the townships, they called people like Kirkko's family. You know, just quick training and that created a problem for their own. I don't want us to go Kirk journalism as well. But just ensure that if it means taking 4 months to work on a story, let's do that. Investigate, get the facts and things like that. Because what I've seen in the recent past,
Late coming with the fidget and then on the switch.
I would
like to know. But I also don't use the word lie. Economical word. It's up from LeBroy. Years of knowing that. So, children be it. What I want to come back to was LeBroy. And, you know, we've been raising with HBC about the increase of type of the food plus. Currently, it's very limited. I think there's a few million people outside, and it's probably getting two extra channels, and that's all of that. But the two extra channels won't increase the size of the footprint. So we'll just use the current crop, current group of people, not more, in terms of language and just all of that. Raising it a few times with SSC, they seem to us actually, except and understand that the footprint problem will be resolved through digitalization. So it's just automatic. The moment it's over, it will be there. If it's something we have to say, whatever. But not long from now, we will switch over to digitalization. Can we then accept, based on their response, that immediately the people's problem in some of the areas where I cover, in those areas, Argentina, the problem will be resolved. Or is it a much more complicated problem or challenge to deal with that? Secondly, my last question, again, the question about language is very interesting. We don't want to get involved in either newsroom or program itself, but yesterday, two certain members agreed that a program like Muvangu, very popular in the followers. But for me, the major part is that taking to the African language viewers, you'll find Afrikaans being the top viewers to it, and yet the subtitle is only English. Only people that want to sell it international. What I would then imagine is that the second biggest group watching Mwangu is Afrikaans, or from the Afrikaans speaking, then you'll do your subtitling in Afrikaans. That would, for me, would be really logic. But it seems that English, through acts of ourselves, continues to dominate. That's your comment.
On the footprint issue, I mean, this has been a huge issue for us at the CASA. And yes, we have expanded it. There's still huge areas where people don't get any reindeer, or they get either ACMM, although there's been a few services, there are other services. SABC will say people say that those areas are often very sparsely populated, but there's still people that don't get radio broadcast in their home language or a language that they can understand. And TV, the whole other thing, they have expanded the TV quite substantially, but there's still those gaps. I think this is a question I need to raise with Isha, because this is a question to raise with FinTech, which is not the intention of the audience. What I've seen is non-viable, you know, audience, they'll pay you the cost of transmitting a station to, because there's so few people there, this is the cost of transmitting the job. That's the one issue that you need to explain. At the same time, what's happened since the first Triple Inquiry report is that people move. So, you know, areas that might have once been predominantly had a huge population of a certain language group have moved up into cities. So when they've expanded and they've got that area is now covered by a station, actually where they're getting the demand for the services in the city. The city doesn't have enough frequency. So when you're talking about expanding all language radio stations into the city, that can be solved by digitalization. You won't have a limited frequency. But about making sure that if there aren't currently analog transmitters in those areas, there's not going to be digital transmitters. Do you know what I mean? In those areas, they're not going to get a service, even though there's less people. And more than that, once you go digital, there's the whole issue of those that are poorest and are probably those that are most affected by not having access to a language in their service, in their language of choice, you even call it, are those that are using very old radios and are going to need, you know, some assistance if they're going to have to buy a receiver that can use information. Because it's not going to be their first priority. So I think digitization helps in that you will be able to hear in Cape Town, for instance. I think it's particular language stations you don't get here. There's been a huge demand for that. You'll be able to have all language stations easily available in Cape Town, but it's going to still need a lot of money from, and both FinTech and SABC committing to go into those rural areas to make sure that there's a transmitter at all.
Just before that, they don't install transmitters. They only do it based on requests from SABC. They don't go about installing transmitters and does all of that. That's not the mandate. They don't have the funds to do that and does all of that. SABC says, but it's there. So it's all that, and we seem not to be able to get the two together to say who's telling the truth here. Where does the problem in the bottleneck lie?
You know, Chairperson, I just want to comment on this. It's not that at the end we all want to lift our hands. We are digesting. And some of us have interviewed Lizzie Price. To be honest, I thought I wasn't going to say anything. But when you look at her CV, it really entices you to talk. Yes. Being a gender activist myself and then a chairperson of the Joint Monitoring Committee, I'm interested really to know what the background you have here of being an activist and lobbyist for ensuring gender sensitivity in media policies and everything. And I know you have also been involved in the MBCA board. What do you think about what we always see on TV, the exposure of the young girl child in terms of the cultures, different cultures, diverse cultures that we have, and the traditions? You think you could, if you were to be on this board now, you are going to instill some difference? You don't have any concern about it? If you talk about gender, a balance and gender equality and equity. I think as a person who has got this experience in policy issues, you can contribute a lot on that, because especially people, I think in the rural areas and other places, it's very difficult to define what gender is compared to women issues. I just wanted to tell you what contribution you can do.
First of all, I think you're right. I think gender and women's issues are very muddled. And not only in rural areas, I think everywhere. If you could forgive me, I've seen forms recently where I'm asked to say what my gender is. That's not right. You know, because gender is something that's imposed. I'm born a woman, but what's been imposed socially is what constitutes gender. You know, so there's a lack of understanding about that difference. I think we often throw away words and things even without realizing of what does it mean to people. On the things that you see, I think one of the biggest problems, and I think it's young girls are not, the range and diversity of young girls in South Africa are not reflected on TV at all. We see certain very urban images often. Same of, actually across all ages of women, I think elder women are not very represented generally, even on TV either, on SABC or ETV. Some of the biggest problems that I have is a personal budget, because I think the code on broadcasting is very strong around particularly protection of children. But I think for whether it's commercial reasons or what, those are often defined. And my worst is the music videos that get shown in the middle of children's programs that are most inappropriate. The language is, and then they're not supposed to be showing those in children's programs. It's clear. You can show anything you want after a certain, hour, but you need to protect children. Some of those videos, and I'm sure you've seen them as well, are very suggestive. But the language, words like bitch, that's what children are being exposed, and they copy what they see there because it's popular culture, the music video. Same as that is the promotions for, which is the code says you cannot promote programs which will only be broadcast after 9 or during children's programs. They are promoted. So children get keen to watch something, because the reason you don't promote it is, one, because the promo might be inappropriate, but two, you don't want to entice children who in this country often don't have adult supervision after that 9 o'clock. It's a dilemma, about that time, to actually watch it. So I think it's a real issue. And I think what you've got to do is make sure that people stick to the code. I think the public broadcaster always, and everywhere in the world, has a greater role to play in making sure that they reflect the diversity of everyone and are respectful of everyone than something like this. And I think that's why people call other public broadcasters sometimes safe, but it's a certain level of respect that the public broadcaster must have. And take up gender issues.
Thank you. I've forgotten my slot. My question, I've given it to Mr. Kumar.
Okay.
Yes.
I just want to check, because in your CV it says that you are an independent consultant doing auditing, editing, research development. Is there any business relationship that you have with any of the competition institutions, like commissioning or anything?
Yes, I have a business relationship with
secondly, that in terms of diversity of views and language, it's of course important for us to maintain them, but at what point, in terms of your view, would we actually reach a stage where we have a common identity, common South African type of vision? As much as it's important for us to encourage all views and languages to be pushed into the same level as English and African practice, but at what point do you think the corporation could assist us to achieve one united nation, culture, you know? Of course, language is quite difficult. Lastly, Chairperson, is the question that relates to the SABC normally gave us a vision in terms of the mandate that they've got to inform the community, to entertain and to educate. But what do you think should be the national trajectory for us as a corporation to take? What is that would make us, the corporation, to provide some type of vision that everybody could follow in any event that you're appointed to the board? Thank you.
Okay.
I also verified the sentence is empty.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Why there's an independent consultant, and if I look at the jobs that I've done, and I thought very seriously about the things that I was doing, is that, of course, some of my work is with broadcasters, some of it, who was the SABC as well, and there's a member of the SABC board that you have to stop. I don't have any business relationship, I don't own anyone, but for example, Telkom Media will seem to have been prepared for their hearing for subscription TV. And that type of work, as SABC was also an applicant in the subscription TV, but I wouldn't be able to do SABC work. And maybe, you know, think about it, because, you know, it potentially could affect me. So I thought about that quite extensively before accepting nomination. And I think it would have to be an ongoing thing. I thought about that, would it be a conflict to take that or not? You know what I mean? And a discussion within the board itself. I hope that I wouldn't end up being poor and, as a result of being an SABC board member. Because it's tough, and I wouldn't have been able to help Telkom Media. I do other work, for example, at the moment I'm helping the Department of Education, who's running a HIV and AIDS campaign among higher education institutions. They're trying to get the 50% people to know their status on campuses. So I do a lot of range of other work. It wouldn't be a conflict. I'm working with a vice chancellor on that. I'm working with Frederick Ibbotson on they're running a course with Frederick Paul McClure. So we can do a community of that I've been asked to come and help. So there's a range of issues I do. In terms of diversity of views and languages, in fact, the thousands was debated when we did the language policy. You know what I mean? Because on one hand you want to show that there's difference, on the other hand you don't want to make it that you end up with that separate little country, you know, in a way, within South Africa, based on language or whatever else. So the language policy is very clear that the aim of it is one, to make sure that people can fully understand and be part of and hear themselves reflected. But two, that the language policy must also already be a unified, must help people to understand each other, and that's why there's a lot of subtitles. Your question of why always in English, I'm not sure why. It could be an Afrikaans as well. It's not to do with... It's the one area that if South Africa opens up and is able to sell programs internationally, whether what language the subtitles are in or what language the programming is in becomes irrelevant in a certain country like Israel and everyone else. You know that anyway as their own subtitles program. It's not a barrier. But yes, so you need to have more multilingual programming. You need to make sure that you don't set up little ghettos, that people learn to understand, you know, each other. And so you need to have diverse programming in a way, one of which is specific for a particular audience, but two, which is for all audiences and helps our citizens understand and speak to each other. It's a mixture and it's hard. Very hard to be in the broadcast experience to make that balance. In terms of a vision that everyone can follow, I think they can't. I think we all need to understand what exactly do we mean by public broadcasting. What do we expect from it? And I think that's an ongoing debate. One thing I know, I didn't do any of our vision, but in a way it is. I think that one of the things that would help the SABC in some ways is there was more transparency of accounting. It's a particular issue that I have. I don't think people know what their license fee is spent on. So if you don't know what your license fee is spent on, and you don't know, and that was a criticism people made, both internally and externally when I was doing the language study, they feel most of the money goes off in comp. Now you can't say yes it does or yes it doesn't, because you actually, when you look at those accounts, and you do scrutinize them, you can't say how much went on admin, how much on other things. Yeah. If we don't get this much fees from licensees, this is going to be the implication. And I think that would help if people understood what it meant and what would be the advantages of paying the licensee and what would be the disadvantages of not. What would you need? So some form of transparent accounting, I think, both be useful to you and make people feel more committed to both paying licensees and potentially government towards putting in money. If they were very clear, this is the outcome. It's not just going into this thing with SABC. If money goes in, we won't have advertising children's programs.
Thank you, Chairperson. I could have made a letter. Thank you, Chairperson. The last, just quick question. This is the last question. Most of the time, the voices of the cooperative is not heard. It is not working. No. It is switched off on the computer. Hello? It works? No. No, it was switched off by him. Not working. All of them. It went blank on the screen and then it cut off. Okay. I said most of the time, the voices of the poor people is not heard in SABC, except when some of us are just mentioning about the poor people, but not themselves. What will you bring about in the board to make changes what is being done currently? Thank you.
I think people getting onto the board, we need to look at when it comes back to transparency of accounting, how money is spent. Secondly, the perception amongst radio stations that are in those regions. You know, they do, I think. Some of those radio stations have very committed people on it who want to, you know, to get the voices of the poor folks. And they can say that their budgets are limited, but they're always counted as the ones who meet the, you know, the language mandate, for example, and the regional mandate. And when it comes down to money that they've got to be able to, for example, go out more. You know, beyond the cities in which they're located, but their budgets are very limited. So I think you need to explore the truth in that. And yes, making sure that you hear poor people, whether it's in urban areas, and there are a lot of people, poor people in urban areas as well as rural areas, requires resources. It's because they're not going to be the ones that phone you up on your talk show. You know, they're not going to even be the ones that maybe write you letters. You expand it, right? It means you've got to go out and listen to them. What's the reason that those are the people that will likely shy away? And I know from when I worked at speech. If they were the microphone, the women are the ones who will hang back, you know, and will not come forward and speak because they're nervous. That means an approach and a way of making you've actually consciously got to make sure when you work over to make sure that you recognize whose voices aren't being heard and you find a way to make it easy for them to be heard. Yeah. But it takes resources. It would need much more going on than being done.
Where does the larger part of your income come from in your property? It
varies from month to month at the moment. I mean, I've only been doing it now in my second year. And probably last year, the majority of my income came actually not from broadcasting at all, but from, I helped, Discovery Health Corporate Social Investment Program. conducted an evaluation on the perspective of the rural health projects that they helped. On what was the way that they were giving funds statistics. So that was not linked to broadcasting. This year, certainly for the first quarter of this year, telco media, it took up quite a lot of my time. But then, yeah, I've also had other jobs. I mean, the discovery carried on this year. But yeah, I mean, it's an issue of income. And the fact that I am a freelancer. But I do know that I wouldn't want to be working for other people. I'm sure that's what you're asking. Would I be able to survive?
I think the point is made. I was also just trying to clarify for myself that in your private consultancy, check with the telecom media, for instance, and that's clearly discovery. I'm not sure if there was specific problem that seems to be linked to the information and so on. But just the question to say that, like you said, you are doing some work with the agency. What does that mean? But you started by the point that shows the lowest child that you claim to be the fund that shows you keep on, and then your other, are you, except for the GCIS, the AMC, where you know, the audit committee, are you on any other board? Let me take a few of my comments with regards to your last round of questions and so on. Any other board membership, where you are, whether, I think I'll be looking into the time that you were here to look into it. I must say I wasn't sure because the Speak magazine was very popular in the 80s. And now I see you are here and so on. Yeah, sure. Just to remind you that we'll come back to you about the study that you did, study about Canada that you promised to give us. We'll share it with other members. Your relationship with the Link Center, if you can just clarify that. I'm raising this because I've been trying to put yourself, Gilbert, and Mongolia, and so on, to say who is who here, and so on.
Then they think it's only me.
Sorry?
No,
that's fine. That's maybe what we need. I think more academic than you commented on the funding issue, so it's not a major question. But you kept on threatening that the country needs to divide the public broadcaster as to what type of broadcasting. I'm not sure what views you have. Because you've got all this public broadcasting, public service broadcasting, public broadcasting service and so on. Where do you locate them in your own mind and understanding? Just to take that debate forward, because I think it's getting debated from time to time, but maybe you can give us your perspective. In the 42 days, maybe you also give us a concluding remark, because I don't think it's after this, you will take any other time. Even if there is a follow-up, it's really your problem. So I wonder if you answer your answer or one follow-up. What are you?
Other boards, not officially, I sit on those two audit committees. Recently, very recently, but I'm not actually a board member, I'm invited, they've asked for my assistance, but I can't be a board member of the National Community Radio Forum. So I'm sitting there and advising them and helping them get ready, for their next Congress. So that's a volunteer job that I do. I also sit on the editorial advisory committee of the Media Magazine. It's not a board, and it's voluntary, and we need to choose really we'll people choose who would be the woman in the media of that year. That's part of our job. The Link Center, I've got no relationship with the Link Center. So they might ask me to come and lecture or do some research for them. But I haven't worked with them over the last while. There was some talk that some research I've been approached to do with that international research by the IDLC in Canada that involves South Africa, Brazil, and Canada, but that is done, and Russia and South Africa, but that is done through the Link Center, so that's not going to be happening anymore. And that's research into piracy, media piracy, in those countries. In terms of the public broadcaster. I think that people use the word public broadcaster, and I'm saying that I'm very guilty of it, because I was part of that Jabulani conference. Jim and I were part of the discussions before 94. We said we want a three-tier system. We never really thought what would it mean. Of course, I think if you look, the law originally was modeled on the Australian law. Then we never looked at what it would mean for South Africa. In terms of funding, there's huge other funding priorities that can't necessarily be funded by government, like some public broadcasters are, because you've got housing issues, you've got backlog issues, you've got health issues. What does it mean in terms of the funding model, but what do people expect of us? And I think in South Africa it's difficult because we've got so many publics in a way, both in terms of language, both in terms of men and women, both in terms of there's huge gaps in terms of poverty and education and all sorts of areas. I think each person will have their own expectation of what they need from a public broadcaster. And I don't think one community even wants to watch the same stuff. We all have different interests and needs. So whereas, radio is a particular passion of mine. You know, I love radio, having a radio journalist. The types of programs that I'll choose to listen to might not be the same as all women of my class and education. There'll be some that are similar and some that aren't. You know, and I think the role for the public broadcaster, one, it has to be able to make money, otherwise there's no use. And at the time when it was running, it was a lot, and that would have severely affected its capacity to produce public broadcasting. So that's the whole issue around, really there needs to be a discussion within government of to what extent can it be publicly funded if it's going to fulfill a public role. And I don't think that issue around the funding model of the SABC being properly explored. At the same time, then, whilst they need to run programs that make money, I think they need to explore what they say makes money and what doesn't. It isn't only English programming. If you do the programming, something like Usually Legal, I know it's controversial in Parliament, but that was oversubscribed for advertising. So a range of different programming, and public interest programming can generate income. So there's a perception that they don't, that it's only the foreign ones that do. That needs to be explored. But then, SABC and any public broadcaster needs to be looking at who's being left out in the media. Who are the commercial media never going to actually look at and make sure that they also cover those people's interests and have their voice heard. Not only those people for whom they would never generate any income, because they're not interested in people that cannot buy their goods, but make sure that their voices are not also neglected by the public broadcaster. And I think that's the issue. And I think you've got a very tough job. I think you're bored, and I wish you lots of luck. I think you've got very good candidates to choose from and get a balance.
Thank you very much. And from here, from good luck. Remember, in the next 5 minutes, we'll be taking the next person. But thank you very much.
Honorable Chairperson, I must just thank members of the committee for affording me this opportunity, and my name is quite humble. I actually come from Tembisa, on the east side, that's where I grew up, in the township, the capital of the airport. Studied there, spent your time in Uganda, not in the car. later to Tanzania and went to Fort Hare. But before I went to Fort Hare, I was actually accepted by the then missionary to work there in the New Zealand Channel. But because of my political activism at the time, the situation of Java was impossible for me to continue the Kaiser Channel in 1987. I then went to Fort Hare University, and of course I have been politically active in the country since 1983, I think, by various communist organizations, the Democratic Party at the time. And of course, when I went to Fort Hare, I studied for a bachelor's degree, physics practice, 3 years. I became president of the FRC at Fort Hare, student government. Deputy President before, in fact, 2 times, I think, for the first election, I think I got the highest number of votes at the time. I fought the university and I got a several years at the council when I got the votes to finance it. So on. I served in various cities and academic colleges at Fort Hare. I then, of course, at the time, was exposed quite a lot. I received a lot of interest from the industry. The first thing I did when I became part of that whole did everything that is to do with media generally, like produce t-shirts or pamphlets or writing posters, and that is where my passion for writing has been. As you know, I write quite extensively about a whole range of things in this country. I then did, of course, an honors degree at Fort Hare, and ironically, I did it in history. I did a diploma in teaching, and I went to teach in Tanzania for, I think, 3 years, and then I left. At the time when I left and then I went to join Siemens. I worked for the Siemens company, Energy Management. I did marketing and sales. So when I got the whole figure of finances, did a bit of that for a few years. I then was elected to serve in the Tanzania Town Council as a councillor. Elected ANC councillor. Became vice chairman of FESCO. And I remember very well our budget was about $3 billion budget for a council at the time, which was quite a lot if you look at the relation, the currency. And I served in the Senkana Metropolitan Council, the ordinary council, and there, of course, I took interest in issues of electricity in the country. I chaired the audit committee, I chaired the finance committee of the council, the vice chair, and I was effectively the facto chair, because the chair was quite busy at the time. And when I left, I then decided that I should leave a political kind of career, or a professional career. Used not to spending and I opted to become a professional or a career assistant in 1998. I became spokesman for Minister Nicholas Tobin in 1998. And then, of course, Minister Asma became minister. Everybody who was working for Minister Tobin was removed out of the minister. I was the only one who was kept, and I had been head of minister for a time when he was running the minister. I was then headhunted by the president. In fact, I went there when I was looking for a job and spoke to the deputy president, whom I had time. And I didn't get the job. He offered me the same job as a spokesman for the president for 18, 5 years. Traveled all over the world, various people. Part of the thing that I did, which I must say humbled me, if you look at the facilities that you have for the president today, the unit buildings and the DNAs, as well as the CCIS facilities, multimedia arrangement, press centers, and so on. I conceived that idea, did it myself on a daily basis. Of course, went to GCI and the GCI advisor, the president, I thought, branding, marketing, politics, and place our country in a better position. And I believe that was the case before I did that. When I left the president, I was frankly tired. I think I had done that job far too long. I think a job like that is only 1 hand check. I did 2 times on board. 1.5, I must say. I went to join Siemens as a creative director in marketing, advertising, communications, a whole range of them, including World Cup 2010. I served on the board of Siemens. I served I served in the board and I served, of course, in the group. I was the far more intelligent today without losing the figure of the next week. They're now approaching 100,000, 100 billion rand in terms of turnover. I serve in the group at Siemens, of FASO, and I also serve in about nine FASO boards. I serve in the board of oil, of nitro, Infacam, gas, whole range of other operations. And as a member of the group at Siemens, I believe that, just maybe I should say something else as well. I'm chairperson of the Northwest Development Corporation, Northwest Development Board, Northwest Development Corporation. I'm chairperson of that, and I serve as well in the board of SA Corridor, international board appointed by Minister von Kratzky. As you can see, I think since 1993, I have taken active interest in communications and media. Have been a very brief speech, I think, stopped. Police at the time in the 1980s. I've generally taken active interest in figures, finances, in management. Oh, by the way, the other thing here which I just need to declare, I'm a 20% owner of a company called Capital Edge, which is a BDE company that was formed with some colleague of mine. And I think there's some announcement in connection with regards to some of our presentations that the company really consortium. Why I believe I could add value to the board, I think that my entire life has always been in media and communication, and that's why I think I can add a lot of value. I've looked at the SABC, public broadcaster, and I think that we've got a lot of work to do, I believe, in that board of the SABC, and I hope the committee so decides to work with a collective of my colleagues on the board to our oversight role, having had, I believe, international experience. Wherever I went, anywhere in the world, in fact, I used to say, let me go to the broadcast facilities of the CNBC in Canada, do the same with the BBC in the UK, do the same with French television stations. I've always taken an interest, and I believe, if you look at the experience, as well as just general understanding of management. So I think one mistake I think is that's happening in our country, that everybody chases GE deals. You take equity, you don't involve in great operations, I believe. And I think for me and for some of us, you could do both. Involved in operations, running a company, as you know, who turned over in a size of fast approaching 100 billion rand. In part of which, in my opinion, sort of a legacy that the company that is not so that it's quite humbling, and I believe I could have a lot of value by serving in that age for the number two.
Thank you very much. Before I
take
your question,
I
would just to clarify the capital edge, what are they doing that you can agree? I mean, communication, media business, like
thank you, Mr. Kamalo. I think the question is big. You are the group general manager at Sasol, in charge of government relations and corporate affairs. But also, you know, these boards of Sasol, Synfuel, Sasol Oil, Gas, Nitro, Chem City, Mining, Polymers. You know, the Northwest Development Corporation, South African Tourism, Black Business Presidential Working Group. I'm asking how much time are you going to have, because normally our experience with the board is that board members of delegation subcommittees in relation to these programs and so forth, which will, it's not just as easy as going to a meeting, sign your mind and then leaving. So I just would like to be quite clear in my own mind that you don't be able to, you always attend every board meeting, for instance. We'd like to know that the person that we appoint would be able to attend each and every board meeting. Do you travel a lot with these various positions that you hold. So we could get some idea of just how available you will be. My second question, I think, also needs to be, would you be able to put the past behind you, as it were, in terms of your political activism? And you know where I'm coming from, in that you know that politics is all about perception. And we would be placed in a very difficult position, I would be. How the public could view an appointment of somebody so recently, so closely aligned to the government, and to not only the president, but former ministers. So I'd like to hear from you how you'd explain this to the public. You clearly told us that you have a commitment to public service, but how then would you go about showing that you would, in terms of the act, apply yourself without any political affiliation or bias in any way? Your business interest has been asked about. With your knowledge, extensive as it is, in communication, you've travelled around the world, you've looked at various broadcasters for ABC, so you obviously, certainly in your previous position in particular, have had a chance to closely study the and there are various reports that have come out lately about situation at the ABC, not only in terms of corporate governance, but indeed how the public sees the ABC. Could you give us some idea of, should you be appointed, what are the problems that you see? Do you see any problems at all? You may not. I mean, I'd like to hear. And if so, how you think one would take the ABC forward in a whole range of areas, in technical and editorial and so on. Thank you.
Thank you for watching.
Thank you very, very much. I don't want to do the first question first. I think I consider myself fortunate in that I work with the president and work with ministers and the government, and something for which I remain humble. Of course, I think that the way in which president gets projected, and if you work with him, as I've done, and I've traveled with him for hours throughout the world, and the way in which I think he gets projected, I think that there is a joint effort. And I think that South Africa has been lucky to have a president like him running the country. And I've been very clear about it, and I really firmly believe that the president has done very well in governing the country. And that's why over the last couple of months, in fact, in a public position. Typical to an American society, that people would rally behind, irrespective of the argument behind, they had a certain head of government or a head of state. I think that Minister Buthelezi in particular is very vocal about respecting the institution of the president. And he has been, obviously, you know, the people must distinguish between the two, and I don't think that is the difference between me and him in the way in which he sees the institution of the president. The issue of political past. If you recall, I indicated in my introduction that I opted for professional career. I'm a professional. And if you recall, think about being professionals, there's something very, very interesting. I always tell people that reputation management, that's the term that we use in the private sector to say to respect reputation. That if you conduct yourself, you can check every editorial that goes to me when I left the presentation. I think everybody was present in the kind of English press, African press, to even the indigenous newspapers about the objectivity which I brought to my role in the president's office, notwithstanding my admiration of the president, and I believe he has done very well for this country, and I think it's something that I will forever hold very dear. In terms of independence on the board, as a professional, I was saying about reputation that if you look at when Tito Mboweni was appointed, he was even worse than me. I was never a member of the ANC. In the NEC, he was the Minister of Labour. He went to the bank, went very well, in fact. He was at the ANC recent conference, attended the recent policy conference, but he executed his job. job as a real true professional. And I believe that I would do that on the board. There has to be an element of detachment from someone's political views. I mean, for maybe the last point I want to raise about this is that 70% of South Africans voted for the African National Congress. And I suppose the majority of people that you would have, whether by support or otherwise, would be members of the ANC. And I have been one of them. But I believe that quite strongly that, you know, I'm quite young in the real scheme of things. I have a professional career to build. I serve in all these boards precisely because I believe I could add a lot of value and that I apply myself. I mean, there's a journalist who works for Rob Rose. Rob Rose is a journalist who has notes and who, as you know, is very sharp when it comes to issues of corruption, of corporate government, and so on. He did a piece about me, which I would like to invite the honorable member to read. And one of the things that he said today, which I thought was, and I was expecting him to take me to the cleaners of the way. But what he did rather was to talk about how outspoken I am. I'm a pretty outspoken, independent person in my own professional way, and I would never do anything to tarnish the reputation of the ANC, tarnish the reputation of the country, and tarnish the reputation of anybody. Maybe the last point, if Sasol is even worse. I think in the group X, we're only 30 of us, or people of color. And I think almost 10 people there are historically Afrikaans, not even white, Afrikaans. We work very well together to bring that diversity, that mosaic of South Africa in that board. So wherever I go, I have, I believe, fiduciary responsibility to do that. So I really think that my views notwithstanding, I will be able to professionally execute my job. I have a reputation and a career to build as an individual, and I really believe that with that certain by being objective on that board. The issue of time. Those boards largely are, in fact, are SASOL boards, so they are part of the normal working of SASOL, big as it is. And so the question of time will not arise. And I believe I will be able to have sufficient time to attend subcommittee meetings with chosen, as well as attend meetings of the board. So I don't think that's a problem. I mean, I have really passion for journalism, passion for communication. And I was saying to my CEO yesterday that I'm quite humbled by this honor because I really believe I can do something that I love so much and that I really can add a lot of value. With regard to the knowledge or with the study of the SAPs, I really done a lot of study. You know, what happened was that I think last year, I did a lot of work, in fact, in my previous job, with the BBC, like about this issue of convergence, issues of broadband, and the whole barrier of other around that convergence issue. The issue of high definition television, for instance, the issue around digitalization of SMEs. I'm very passionate. I mean, if you go to rural areas today, 5% of South Africans still don't have access to broadcast, to radio and television. And you know that because of poverty of South Africa and because of our past, quite clearly those people have the majority in black. And I believe that the public broadcaster will have to reach out to those people. They've got to do more in terms of language services. I still believe that person in the rural areas and so on who can't understand those in the LSM 1-4, we need to really take care of those people, and I believe the public broadcaster should be able to decide to do that. With regards to the situation at the SAGC, I am a very strong believer in a credible, independent, critical SAGC. In fact, if you read the news and if you this morning I was listening to Kulani Gwala. Kulani Gwala was having all sorts of people there talking about the situation around the health minister. What I think the public broadcaster should do, not sit things under the carpet. Do those things, debate them via talk show. And I think, I mean, for an example, this other issue that I want to go back to, which is an issue around the digitalization and what it gives, the options it will give us around multiple channel systems, where SuperSport, which is a competitor of the SABC, is Sport 1, 2, and 7 or 8. The SABC doesn't have that capacity, and I've seen some of the plans that the SABC has put in place, which would make sure that the SABC does precisely that in terms of the digital convergence and the DGT approach of the SABC. So I think on the technical side, as I was saying, that having worked for Siemens, one of the things I took interest in, little did I know that I would submit my name on the SABC, was to be very involved in understanding this issue around convergence and around the high definition television and a whole range of them. And I think having been at Siemens and having done that project and having studied it quite extensively, I have had numerous meetings last year with them, with the people who are doing that contract, huge contract with the BBC, that does precisely what the SABC is going to do now. believe that technically I'll be able to do that quite humbly. In terms of the public and the way the public sees the education, your last question, I'm thinking of the view that indeed, you know, people don't understand the credibility, not only of our serving officers, office bearers, credibility of, in the public eye of the SAGC, something that I hold very dear. And I believe being part of that collective of the board, indeed, we need to be able to restore that. There's a problem, which of course I've got my own views with regards to some of the issues. When I'm not really close to the issues that the SAGC is doing, I think it's wrong for an outsider like myself to start passing judgment on how the current incumbents are handling various issues that are in the public domain. I think for me, if I were to go into the board, to apply my mind independently, not influenced by political or others. In fact, the charter of the SAGC and various editorial policies prohibit, by the way, that you bring your own political, religious, or any other kind of issues into your function as part of the SAGC. And I firmly believe that that I would be able to do that. But for me, the issue of the independence of the SAGC, the credibility. By the way, if you work for a company like Sasol, people have got to believe you, because remember, the company is publicly listed. People buy shares in that company. If for whatever reason, wittingly or unwittingly, you behave in a manner or in a way that presupposes lack of integrity, lack of honesty, I think that your share price and the value of your company will collapse. I believe it's not the government's side. That's precisely what I believe that the SAGC should do. Each and every case should be looked at on its own merit, I believe. And I firmly believe that the SAGC management should be because I don't think that. Because if you do something wrong, you act something wrong, you are bound indeed to have that continue for the rest of your life. And young as I am, surely reputation is very important. I've got a lot of work to do ahead of me in the corporate world, in our corporate career. And surely I can't give it on the cost of lack of reputation. And therefore, reputation management, the corporate term, becomes absolutely vital.
Thank you very much.
As explained earlier during the nomination process, that I'm not related to Mr. Beki Kumalo. We are related only by surname and maybe by lineage, but there's no direct relationship to him either. Mr. Kumalo, I just want to check with you in relation to the media diversity of views, stuff like that. What is your opinion in terms of the news coverage in our country? Comparing that maybe with the lot of other institutions that you might have interacted with in the course of your work in the president and also the various ministries. You spoke about the CNBC and many of those that you might have interacted. What do you think could be done either to improve or to do anything about the news coverage in our country? Do you think that the type of quality of news that we get is what we deserve and what we pay for in terms of licensing? Secondly, you are aware that you are nominated by an institution called Bokamo Sobarona Investment Trust. Is there any investment or any shareholding that you hold in that company or not? The first question, chapter after that, is an answer. And the last one is that you are the new chapter of what is called in the Northwest NWDC, the Northwest Development Corporation, and also in the Power Board. It could happen that, as it has happened in the past, that the Northwest Development Corporation moved from one hurdle and crisis to another. Once you are appointed to the board, what how would you handle a situation where there's bad publicity of a company in which you are a chairperson and are equally a board member of the South African Broadcasting Corporation? That would be all, chairperson. Sorry.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The issues of diversity, I have written quite extensively in the South African over the last couple of weeks precisely about this very issue of diversity, the plurality of society. I think that the charter of the SAGC in fact propels us, encourages us to bring and encourage diversity, not only of religion and the plurality of religion for political views. I mean, it was very important to the Honorable Member that what in fact the leader of the DA said to me in a private conversation about these issues, precisely because he agrees with some of the things I have said, not the political side of it, but generally around issues of diversity. And I'm mentioning that because I think that the issues, for instance, of news coverage, you know, one of the things that I really, and I've been raising it with my colleagues at SABC, which I believe I'll be able to raise again if I were to be elected to serve on the board. I just believe that we don't have enough business people, for an example, or the ability. I think that what we are instead having, as I see, and observing it from the outside, to a very large extent, I think we must move into an era of human interest stories. And I think we must blend that with what the SABC is currently doing in terms of highlighting, because I believe that nobody in this country can do that better than the SABC. What I believe the current government is doing in a whole range of things to improve the lives of the people. But I think that my role in the board, I suppose, will be to add, will be a humble contribution, a part of that collective, I believe, to be able to bring in, I believe, more business on the SABC News. Because I believe that there has to be the right balance of the two business and political news at SABC. And I really believe I will do that. In terms of the quality of news, I think that there are so many things we can do, I believe, all of us, to improve. But I really think that one can question, I think, the ability of people in the news section of SABC to do that, and I believe they do. For me, the biggest challenge of SABC, I believe, is retaining and attracting staff, and the issue of training. My friend, Jimima, you will not agree with me, he has been questioning this issue around skills and saying that, saying whatever he's saying around skills, and I think he should speak for himself. Other than I believe that the training of journalists at the SABC, attracting of those journalists and remuneration of those journalists and keeping them there. I mean, if you look at the BBC, for an example, John Simpson has been the news anchor at BBC now for the past 20 years. Peter Mansbridge does the same for CNBC in Canada. They are legendary figures at CNBC in Canada. George Harrison, I can mention rather so many names, those two broadcasters. And in the United States, the same. With Larry King and others. I'm not sure, and I really would like to go into this matter on the SABC because I believe we need to keep our best talent. I don't know the dynamics of why is it happening at the moment that there's high turnover. Perhaps the problem in South Africa also is that journalists at the SABC, even SASOL has the same problem. Our journalists and our people who are technical are being actually poached to work in the Middle East where they don't pay taxes. And they go out of the country for a whole variety of reasons. So the issue of skills and how you hold on to those skills is not only a challenge of the SABC. I think the challenge of the entire South African economy. The country, I think, is really going into problems. In fact, I saw a figure recently which said that the artisans that the country has, in the next 15 years, they will not be there. So the problem, let's not say, is an SABC problem. It's a problem across the board. It's even worse with companies like ours, because if you are going to compete with a bigger player in the company that I work for, you need a much more bigger and a much more stronger company. You need to retain your skills and stay in your career. I think it's a problem. The issue of Bukamuso Investment Trust, I don't have any business dealing with Bukamuso Investment Trust. That's the issue of conflict. The issue of Northwest Development Corporation and my role there, and also if there are things that will emerge about it or about SASOL. That is why, if you're a board member, you can't be involved in operational decisions. The issue of the sanctity of editorial independence of the news team, to come and have a teleconference each morning, look at events in the country, take editorial decisions, and the non-interference of the board in those decisions, for me, are sacrifices. It's one thing that I believe I hold very, very dear. It's something I will defend unto death. And when one of the newspapers in this country said that Colonel Amang should not have the right to reply, Colonel and I have been disagree on a whole range of things, but I believe Colonel has the right to be published, and I've defended his right to be published, and I think I'll do so because it's one of those things that I believe I hold very dear in my mind. The issue of the plurality of views, the issue of independence of views, and it's something that I hold very, very dear.
Well, I don't know whether you
have
something to say.
Jefferson, I was talking with Kumalo, Mr. Becky Kumalo, so I contacted with the president so I can ask him about the Muslim Becky Commission, you know. Ask him about that, you know, just to prove mine, but maybe come through. Yes, I'm following what Mr. Kumalo just told me last week from NTBC, parallel to the good work they are doing. They are also marked in a lot of controversies they shouldn't be involved. You know, you can look at the blacklisting, confirm and so struggle of the president that's not being broadcasted. No, all those topics. But the last one is alleged mismanagement and that's all of it. And that sometimes gets more and bigger attention than the real issues as been broadcast by SABC. What I find disturbing, I cannot recall at any stage during all this, some of these things have been arranged, now, I've ever heard the board pronouncing themselves on that. And yet you find the very same people they leave it to are caught up in the middle of it. Let me give you a typical example of the group CEO. The group CEO, you know, is take what the Malayan is that has written about the financial mismanagement from the legal person, the next one. Then they mention there's a relationship between that person and the group CEO. I surely can't expect the group CEO to respond to all this controversy. You expect somebody to come in. And I hear what you're saying, that the board should say amen from running the business. But the problem is that somewhere you need, I think, as it says, there is a traitor over there. Either need a complete revival, face of whatever, but they seem to be coming from one crisis to another one. And yet, it's been good other programs we all know that. Somewhere you need to come in. How do you see your role? Can you still have a hand off when you carry on, you die or whatever? Do you believe that the board should be, and I hear what you're saying, that there should be a kind of hand off, if I understand you properly? But surely you reach the point where you need to come in and try, if I could use the word, save it, save the situation. Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Difficult question. I think that the point of departure for us, the issue of appointing people to run the thing, professional, highly competent, nice racial mix of black and white, and I think it is very, very important. I want to tell people that, you know, if you employ people in any industry, make sure that it's a nice excellent, because what it then does, not only introduces a variety of cultures, a variety of views, plurality of them, people. The issue of the board and also his ability or inability, whether to commission or omission to be involved in, you know, in the matters that the honorable member has mentioned, I believe a fight is important, because I think that where there are issues that are being raised, clearly where management is caught in the middle. You know, one of the things I was telling people is that I was running a media workshop the other day for 100 communicators, and I told them the thing that they couldn't believe. I said to them, you know, from a media and reception point of view, if there's an allegation against you that people make, whether right or wrong, the first thing that people do is go into a defensive mode and to start labeling people. If it's raised by Dean Smart, you might say, if it's raised by somebody who is wise, you might say, he's wise. For me, look at the merits of each and every argument that people raise, and deal with the merits of the case that people raise, objectively, as a public broadcaster. Deal with that matter, and don't look at the political view. If there's a political agenda, that's a separate matter. Deal with that political agenda separately. But if there are allegations that are made about propriety, about lack of corporate governance, and so on, the board should come. Remember, by the way, the critical thing, and I know this having been working for a company, and I'm acknowledging it because a number of the companies I've mentioned. Always there's this dichotomy. How do you deal with this relationship between management and the board? It's not a problem with SABC. The problem is with the private sector. It's a problem. I mean, if I run a company as big as ours, where I work at the moment full time, that is why we always say ourselves. And then it's my job to keep on raising to my colleagues in our team. Don't wait for the board. Just act properly as the executive running the company, so that it reduces the ability and the need for the board to be.
But I feel you're right, a lot of members. Where indeed members of management, including the group CEO, are implicated or allegations are made against them, they've got to be presumed innocent until proven guilty. They've got to be a fair process. They've got to have all the upcoming content, the rights of the other side in there, but not in way. All those principles of finance, which are in all the SEC documents, all those things should happen. And the board is the last resort in the issue for now. I mean, I have a very, very interesting opinion in that. Let's not be defensive, first of all, when allegations are made. Let's not play the race card when allegations are made. Let's not play the political card. And I would really appeal even to members of the opposition, myself on this matter, or people who are not necessarily in the board. If they make allegations, it's always better for an institution like the SEC that we should remove our political head. Let's look objective. If somebody has committed crime, the police must move in, the scorpions must investigate, the board must begin a process, and those things, I believe, must be made without fear, without flavor, with the necessary fortitude that I believe they require. But, I mean, if you read Shakespearean tragedies, you know this very, very well. Shakespearean tragedies, chair, are replete with examples of good character, honorable, with integrity, but with what they call flaw of character. And in most cases, that flaw of character in Shakespearean tragedies will relate more or less to something like lack of judgment. Lack of judgment, as you remember very well, is what indeed caused things of downfall and caused Brutus of downfall in those wars in Shakespearean tragedies. So, the issue of judgment, by the way, not only peculiar, I don't believe it's an issue for the SEC. Judgment is an issue that everybody, in your daily life, in your private life, good judgment is very, very important. In fact, your ability as a leader, whether political, business, corporate, or whatever, or a lawyer, sense of good judgment is very, very important. You must be able to know where to be involved, where not to be involved. And I really believe that this issue of that symbiotic relationship between the board and management is very important. Because those are two different institutions. People who must take editorial decisions are people in the union, not the board. But people who must therefore exercise their right of oversight, I believe, are people outside of the board. And therefore, if the board believes that it has got to intervene, they've got to intervene. But remember, it can't intervene on each and every issue. It must be an issue on the basis of its own merit. And so on. Because management normally don't like board interference. So for me, it's how you have that situation. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr.
But I see some looking at the board.
Thank you. I can't help remembering what you referenced just now to Shakespearean tragedy, but I can't help remembering that our prison frequently used to cite certainly Elizabethan, but Shakespeare also in his Friday letters. And I wonder whether you may have inspired any of those references. Did you used to discuss the Friday episodes? Did you even sort of write some of them? But if I may get to the point, I recently had the pleasure in the parliamentary meeting of listening to Mr. Obeke Kumalo in full battle defending free speech at the 20 years after their conference. And bearing in mind that the Act requires the board members to be committed to freedom of expression and fairness, I'd like to say that I've seen him in action and under attack, as it were, and robustly, as I thought, most stirringly defending robust debate. I've also been struck today by your remarks on professionalism and the ability to exclude political affiliation or union in your professional judgment. You speak after my own heart. This is the kind of debate Mr. Tommy Maguire and I used to have. I will so miss Tommy, who has not been renominated. But we used to argue it from different times. But you speak after my own heart there. But now, please help us some more. You can ask the exact question, the right question. How would we deal, given the fact that you have until recently been the first person called for the president. How will we deal with the perception of independence for the SABC? It has to be independent. It has to be seen. It's perceived to be independent as an institution in a plural work, as you know, it must be independent in so many ways from government. And we have yesterday the fact of sitting incumbent, who is now a spokesperson for a certain government in a certain sphere, and thinks that he can do the two things. I don't think it's possible. Now, you have left. The salient point here is that you are no longer the president. But by the time this new board comes in, Chairman, would that be early next year? How long a period would have elapsed by early next year since you left the presidency? And I mean, what other assurances can you give? At the end of the day, we have to judge this thing. It's unfortunately very close to something. You have a very high profile. People will remember you and will go on remembering you in that capacity, problematically, for a long time. Only in respect of the interest. So give us some more of your thoughts on this, because you clearly must have thought about this. And you must have come to the conclusion that it in fact is all right. But at the end of the day, we have to decide. Now, do you think the inflection of time will have taken care of it by early next year? Or what? What other arguments would you give us?
And I'm sure the Honourable Member that the President writes his own letter every Friday. I have got absolutely no role in the things he chooses and the kind of writing he has to write. The issue of Jakhaya and free speech that the Honourable Member refers to, it's something that I believe I hold very dear. I think that the media in South Africa has got to allow differences of opinion. Said so publicly, the SABC must do the same. I think in my opinion and the way I observe the progress of South Africa is that I believe there is a tendency these days to say the SABC must be the only one who must be attacked for not allowing the plurality of views. But I think if you look, even I would argue that in fact, and I've said so in the past, that it's a big challenge for the print media in this country. If they don't agree with you in some of the newspapers, they don't publish you, they don't do anything. And I've not seen any statement that attacks those people. And hence my issue around free speech. You know, Dean, I have spoken to all the editors, some of whom I started working in the Mail and Guardian in the Sunday Country itself. So we remain very good friends. And I've been saying to all of them that it's very important that this principle must apply across the board, without fear, without favor. And that is something that I say. And I can assure the Honorable Member that on the board, one of those things that I'm very familiar with is free speech, plurality of views. And I believe I will be able to do that in quite with humility. The issue of the independence of the SABC and my role, first of all, I want to say to the Honorable Member, I do not hold political office. I am not serving and holding political office in the branch, in the NEC, and so on of the SABC. And I see some of the colleagues who have to hold political office as national office bearers. Of the SABC, of various political parties, I don't hold political office. In fact, it's not my intention to hold political office, contrary to what some newspapers are saying of late that I intend to go back and hold political office. I see myself as a professional. I want to go to university and study, finish my MBA, and do a whole range of things, and really become a real entrepreneur. Because I think that the big challenge, in fact, as I see it in Africa largely, by the way, and that's why we have got so many problems. Everybody wants a political career. Everybody wants to be a civil servant. Everybody wants to be a member of parliament. Everybody wants to wake up every morning and read a newspaper. I mean, and people were in exile were telling me these stories about what happened in those African countries. I see myself as a budding professional. I intend to stay that way. I think I've been very fortunate, Honorable Member, in that throughout my career over the last couple of years, I think I've been exposed to a whole range of things at the highest level. And I believe that that is in fact the kind of experience that I'll bring to bear on the SABC board. In terms of memory, you know, Milan Kundera spoke about that the struggle of mankind is the struggle of memory against forgetting. You remember that? And I think Kundera is probably right. But I know that and I accept that there may very well be a consensus with regard to what people call my proximity to the president. In fact, I haven't met the president privately since I left him 2.5 years ago. I haven't met him. And I said so to the member very well in the car speech. and that if I want to meet him myself, I will send him a queue, so I will not be given preference to see him. I mentioned that. It was an interesting encounter with Frederick on this level. But the point I'm really making is that I've got a profession, I'm a professional. Where I serve, wherever I serve, the issue of integrity, the issue of fairness, the issue of natural gas, which are all in all the safety problems, very, very, very important issues. And I've acted, and I've referred to the article written by Rob Rose precisely to do that. I really don't believe that all those issues within the previous my position on the safety board. I've got a long career to date, and I believe that it's one but more position and being outspoken. You know, people forget that being outspoken does not mean not being independent. In fact, I would encourage people to be outspoken, and I'm one of those that to be outspoken. People who have worked with me and who know me know that I am pretty outspoken, and I would do so.
Thank you, Chairperson. You are energetic, inspired, and upward growing in the corporate world. But when appointed to the board, will you come back to us in Kandla, in Makaveleni? Those voices that are not heard in SABC to remember us, to take us with you up there where you are. Thank you.
Would you plow back? Remember you grew up there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks, Honorable Member. The Chairperson spoke about what will happen in the future. Frankly, nobody can predict the future. That's my response, a humble response to the Chair. The issue to Honorable Nomalo, you know, the issue that I'm very passionate about, you see, we need to give a modern, sophisticated, prosperous country with a growing economy. We have to do that. I think that the public enjoys us when they elect us, meaning they elect members of parliament like yourself, and when we serve in the board that we're serving at the moment, in order to try and make sure that we're able to, I believe, grow the economy, increase the international competitiveness of South Africa, create jobs, do a whole range of things. So I really believe that the 5% people in the rural areas and the language service stations of the SABC, I saw the figure that 18 million people still listen to SABC radio. The public service side of that SABC radio, which is awesome. It just tells you that the majority of people sit in that LSM 1-4. And therefore, going back to the rural areas and making sure that the 5% or so who do not have access have access, the issue of the funding of the SABC, which is another issue, because I see that President Samuel Zuma has banned the Bold and the Beautiful between 5 and 7 and the But the point that I'm really raising is that, frankly, the SABC should be broadcasting news and current affairs between 5 and 7 during prime time to ensure that people are informed, are educated, and in the day. But I believe because of commercial imperatives of the BBC, Days of Our Lives has now been moved for the central BBC 3, which is attractive. The commercial side of the BBC has been done that way. And I really believe firmly that if you look at the generations now, I see that in generations advising, the advertising tax in generations during the entire show. I think commercial imperatives, I mean, it generates more money. For instance, generations on any other television program. In prime time television in South Africa. But the commercial imperatives coming, how do we protect the independence of the SABC? And because most people make a mistake. They always talk about political interference and political influence. What about commercial imperatives? I would argue, and this is my humble view, that commercial imperatives in fact have got more influence over programming on television and radio, frankly more than political imperatives. And I think that the role of a public broadcaster, the BBC, and I've always wondered why, until I met them, and as I've been saying now throughout the morning, that meeting the SABC and talking to them, those people at the BBC, they've been telling us that if you watch BBC, have you ever seen an ad on BBC Well? It's no ad, because they raise money from television licenses. They are indeed a public broadcaster. There are no commercial imperatives. And really, I think that the funding model of the SABC needs to move towards this kind of thing. So the people of Uganda, where I come from, and the people generally of a variety of places across the country. I mean, I went in my previous life, as I call it, to somewhere next to the Botswana border. Signals on radio and TV don't work then. People, if you say you are so-and-so, they don't even know who you are. They only can recognize, and they can't even hear your voice. They can see you for the very first time. I suppose members of parliament who travel to the far-flung areas of Northern Cape will attest to what I'm saying. I really think the public broadcaster owes it to those people to reach out. Because radio, I mean, in the Congo, in the DRC, there's a radio station that's called Radio Okapi. And you know, Okapi is the knife in the South African country lingo. Those people, they love that Radio Okapi in the DRC. It's listened to by more than 30 million people in a war-ravaged country of the Congo. It just shows you the power of radio. And that is why I believe, and quite firmly so, that this issue of a very strong, prospering and thriving radio services, in my opinion, are very, very important. And really, if I point it to the board, I believe we should not forget those people who are currently in my right. We really owe it to them.
Thank you very much.
No, I think that is the relationship that is in very key headquarters. You remember you once told us that there is an area in the Northern Cape. where people, you said they still think that PW water is in the present or something like that. Well, those people don't know that Mandela was passing there and some of it. No, the question really that I wanted to ask, part of it just responded in terms of what kind of model of the public broadcaster you actually need. And as you look at the SABC at the moment, particularly from the content point of view, program, do you see that there's a lot of, you know, inclination towards fulfilling that sort of mandate. Perhaps you can build on that theme that you are responding to. But secondly, your previous life experience, I don't think it's a constraint. I think it would be quite a useful experience for the but just on the basis of that experience, you know, being a spokesperson of the ministry, 2 minutes of education and the practice. What has been your sort of experience with the SABC, which you think that has got to be attended to, both from the point of view of, you know, as a board member, but also, you know, in terms of program, but my view is that there are issues of paradigm which of course should be attended to. So perhaps this conceptualization of a public broadcaster and what is it that needs to be
Yeah, that was your preliminary, you know, views about what has been your experiences and what you think you need to be attended to in the context of the
community. Thank you very much, Honorable Member Masaloha. I think that at the moment, figures I see, advertising contributes about 80%, 70%, I think. 80%, yeah, of the SABC contributes the bulk of the funding of the SABC. Yeah, 80%. 17 comes from license, and 30% comes from government. I think one of the things that I'm sure we could do with some of the positions that and the exposures that we've been exposed to in the past would be to engage with government. But I really simply believe that, see, the British model of the BBC, which gets almost its entire funding from licenses and the culture of payment and so on in the United Kingdom, and the culture of non-payment, as we call it that way, in South Africa, and the challenge of poverty, by the way, preventing a number of people from paying for their TV licenses. The fact that I really want, I would use my position on the board to argue collegially, friendly, to the government. To say to the Department of Communications that it is very, very important that we therefore find a formula through which the SABC could get public funding in a much more bigger way than it is the case at the moment. And I'm quite aware of the challenges that government is facing. So it's a question of engaging with government on this matter, because I believe that our modeling is wrong. You know, I mean, I remember very well, I used to tell people about the story. I watched an interview between George Lobo and facilitated by Mr. Fenter and Ken Owen in 1990. If you remember, before 1990, there was a lot of news and current affairs on TV in South Africa, which now is gone. But now, what I think we're having a commercial imperative. And I really believe, and remember, this is not an issue that, it has to be an engagement, a constructive one, with government on this matter, because the more funding there will be and the more funding there is, I believe it will enable the SABC, the public service side of the SABC, in terms of the Broadcasting Act, that the SABC will therefore be able to execute its model, similar to the BBC model. I mean, if we are now saying we're doing this convergence, we're doing a digital television, the minister I see has put a deadline of 2011, all those things will only happen, I believe, if there's a greater shift in the funding model of the public broadcaster. So I believe that this issue that the Honorable Member is raising, for instance, about programming, local content. I mean, local content is very expensive, because remember, you must pay for things like set, you must pay for your intellectual property, you must pay for a whole range of other things. I mean, Generations, for instance, only made money after 5 years. And remember, and even if of course they may have the largest number of viewers, even if they have the kind of programming that they may have, because of the NSN figures, they won't be able to make the kind of money that Radio 7 or Radio 5 FM or Metro FM is making on the basis. So I believe those are some of the challenges. In terms of the experiences, and I will not be long, the Honorable Member, I really think that we will need then to see, for instance, as the various legislation and acts say that there's more local content, but how do you make it profitable? Because at the end of the day, whichever thing that we do in the funding model that we do, in programming, in terms of paradigm, in terms of licensing, and all range of things, it's not that we make it very, very profitable with the cash abilities that the SABC will have to do all sorts of things. I mean, if you look at the kind of challenges for 2010, it will require a lot of capital investment. If you move into the DTT migration, for instance, that requires billions of rand. So it's how then you are able to do that. I think for me, my past life, I hope, will be able to enable me to have a better insight of how government operates as an executive level, so that I can interface and help and work with my colleagues, interface with government, so that I believe we can then be able to do all those sorts of things around programming, including local content, meeting all the CASA requirements. Because those requirements, it's not a question of whether or not. I believe the SABC is going to fulfill those requirements about languages, about diversity, about a whole range of things. So I really believe that my previous life will be able, I will be able to professionally bring it to bear to do the thing that I was referring to.
You didn't get it to
do that?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Kumalo, you've just told us how you admire our president, which, I mean, our president. This is a good thing because I like the person that I wait for even today. But there's a accusation of you or a critic that is outside there about the SABC being not tolerant to the views that are critical to the president. Something that led to some people accused the SABC of being blacklisted, and there's something that led to a commission of inquiry. There's also a documentary thing that is still going on with the SABC. It's not broadcast because it's also critical about the president. The number of things that one can count it is biased, it is in fact it has even gone to an extent of taking political sides even within the ANC. Now, if you were in the position of Mr. Edifunde or just a board member when all these things were happening, what would be your approach? Do you believe in this accusation? If you were to be appointed to the board now, being number 1 or 12 or in the middle, what would be your contribution in changing around those perceptions about the SABC, taking into account that you are seen by the public, you know, that people like the judge, as you said, as a basic person to call it. So to show to the people of South Africa that you are independent and you allow people to voice themselves. What is that to you?
Thank you.
Thank you
very much, honorable member. I think that more time than 5 years with me than most people. I traveled with him for several hours. Gained quite a lot of knowledge and understanding of functioning of government. But today I work for the 100 biggest industrial companies. I really think that my opinion is that he does not have any desire and I not work for the president at that time. Because I think that what he's therefore done is that company expands. It allows the ability to interact at a high level at the corporate world and bring to bear my experiences over the last couple of years. But also, remember, and people forget this, that people think that if you work for the president, you just agree with everything that the president says. Richard Calland wrote a book recently about South Africa, about the president and how it functions. And I would regret that when I remember. Mr. Talan does the peep out, we have a difficult question. The robust engagement with the president, contrary to the popular belief. The president doesn't just come and give us instruction and say, you do that, we engage. When we disagree with him, we would say so, quite openly, quite candidly, with respect to the office of the president. And I really believe that it happens everywhere. It happens everywhere. Even in board meetings of all these big companies, CEOs normally would allow people to have a conversation with them and they would argue. And the CEO would say, guys, everybody is now sitting for 5 hours. This is what we shall do. And all of us must fall into line. Can't be two ways about it. Whether you are a corporate leader or whether you are a political leader, if you are a minister, you do the same. You call your staff and say to your staff, you know, there is an issue coming. Your staff must speak their mind. So this notion that people in the presidency, like where Chris during my time, couldn't speak their minds, that's what he was doing. And therefore, the point that I'm really making is that if one were to work on the SADC, one would not be influenced by that. The issue, for instance, that the honorable member is raising about the SADC not intolerant of views that are critical to the president, you know, I really would like to challenge everybody. But this is not a challenge only for the SADC. Challenge of diversity. It's a challenge of both the electronic media and the print media in this country. And I have written extensively about this. I mean, I don't want to go after newspapers and media. But I really believe, frankly, that it is very, very important that this does not only apply to the issue of diversity. It applies to the print media, it applies to the broadcast media, it applies to the SABC and others. And therefore, if I were to serve on the board, you know, I mean, some colleagues of mine have watched that documentary that people are talking about in this country. And I see no reason why it could be public broadcast. And people have seen that thing. It's so inaudible. I think sometimes, you know, some of these things, we just sometimes make them so controversial and only. But can I just say something very, very important here? You know, if you make allegations against a certain head of state, and you say the certain head of state was involved in murder, or allegedly involved in murder, in my opinion, it's a very, very, very serious allegation. That's a serious allegation. I mean, if you look at that documentary based on what I've been informed and what I've read, it does make some of those allegations. I think it's very tendentious, and I agree with you, Honorable Member. And the point that I'm really making for me is that the SABC board, in an instance like that, they will have to engage with the issue of justice. Get the advice of senior counsel. Check the veracity, the allegations, whether the matter has been tested through the virus producers and so on, to test the authenticity of some of these allegations. I mean, that really is a very, very serious matter. If you make allegations of that nature against a serving head of state, you better be absolutely sure that indeed those allegations will stand in the court and that those allegations are correct. If that is the basis of the SABC's decision not to run it, I would sympathize with the board and I would have taken the similar decision. So I'm saying, I'm not sitting in the board, so I don't have access to the documentary. But on a matter like that, I would have to indeed look at it objectively, apply my mind independently, not influenced by any of my beliefs, ideological, political, personal, religious, but look objective. But really, colleagues, I want to say this thing and say it very, very clearly so that there is no misunderstanding. The independence of the SABC is absolutely vital, absolutely paramount. And I believe that all of us who seek to serve the SABC in this way should ensure that the sanctity of that particular independence of the SABC. But I really want to say that where there are allegations made against the person of the head of state. In a matter like that, clearly the board must be independent, apply its mind, come to a particular conclusion. And really, if I were to serve on the board, I can't predict what I would have decided. But surely a matter like that, I would have handled it with absolute care. The issue, for instance, around people being blacklisted and all those sorts of things, you know, I really still believe everybody must be head on their feet. Whether you are a colleague among, or whether you are a professor. up the professor. This professor was very critical at UCT, who criticizes Pierre quite a lot. Who was the Dakar? His daughter is a journalist writing for
Something kind of life.
But I really believe that it is very, very important, therefore, not to take an official policy, my view, to prevent certain individuals from being heard. I think let everybody be heard, let all the views be heard, and so on. The issue that the honorable member is asking about being in the board. The thing about being a board member, honorable member, is about your fiduciary responsibility. Even in the United States, in terms of the King Code, you can be held personally liable as a board member if, in fact, you take decisions where, one, you have not applied your mind, and two, you are being deliberately disingenuous and being deliberately dishonest. And I think that the issue of corporate governance propels us, all of us, myself included, that it is very difficult to pass judgment on decisions that were taken in my absence. It's so unfair, because I was not there. I don't know the merits and the demerits of the case. But I can assure the honorable member, indeed, that if I am appointed the independent, I will read every document as I always do. I will question everything. It means the officials must come and explain, the bureaucrats of the SADC, they will come and explain to the court. We'll leave no stone unturned. We'll apply our minds independently, because I believe that is the right thing to do. There's an issue that the honorable member has raised, which also I want to answer in my closing remarks. And I must be very careful on this one, and I'm going to speak very slowly. It's around the perception that I'm a lady man. I think the colleagues, I have taken a particular position in the last few weeks because I believe that the president, very well. Runs the economy. It has got more than 4 years now, effectively, of growth, positive growth rate. The governor of the Reserve Bank said something to me which I really want to say to the members of the committee today, because it's something that, unfortunately, the governor will have to excuse me, because the governor was right. The governor said to me one day, "Baby, we took this conservative economy policy. People do not trust former left-wing parties and liberation movements to run a modern economy." And he said, you know, when they met, those days, even before 1990, after 1990, their biggest challenge was to make sure that they run this economy and run it so well and that they can prove those cases wrong. I mean, last week, if you look at the marketplace was falling left, right, and center. I mean, in one of the papers I see, the South African market and the JSE were blocked 487 billion rand in one day of trade at the JSE. That's two times the size of SASO, the time the biggest industrial company. And yet the governor, in the middle of that, took a decision to hike interest rates by 50 basis points. It shows independence. And if I go to the SABC, that's the kind of independence that I would show and demonstrate. That you act independently, you look at the facts at hand, you act as a professional. Why I've been talking about these issues is because I really firmly believe that, my views about president or about anything will not influence. And that is why I've been a very strong admirer and defender of the president as a head of state. In fact, I've done something no different, I believe, to what the minister of Homa, former minister of Home Affairs, Minister Botelho, has been doing. The last thing I just want to say, which is also the issue that the honorable member raised, it was nuanced in the question of the honorable member, the issue about taking part in the if you look at the United States, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have been traveling throughout the United States campaigning for president of the U.S., campaigning for the nomination within the Democratic Party in the United States, leading to the National Democratic Convention in the U.S. In fact, what has happened there, you couldn't believe the amount of exchange. But once the Americans have chosen a head of state, the American dream concept comes into play. Everybody in the U.S., including Fox News, including CNN, including everybody else, will rally behind a certain president in the United States. I personally don't understand why in South Africa we treat things differently. Who whoever will be elected as president of this country in 2009, Chairman, will get from me the same support that the current president gets. That support will be unqualified, will be 100% loyal, will make sure that the country can grow. The SABC board becomes a mosaic in that big scheme of things. Because the institution of the country, Minister Bujenese, I'm sorry to keep on saying this, Honorable Member, but because everybody's been ignoring him. He has been saying something that's so fundamental. He says that he can every state of the nation address. And the thing that he has been saying there is exactly what I'm saying. That whoever gets elected, all of us will rally behind him. So the issue of me exercising my rights in the board, if I'm lucky enough to be elected into the board, if I'm elected at the end, at the beginning of beginning effectively next year when the leadership of the party would have been decided anyway. So that matter, I believe, would be irrelevant. But be that as it may, I still believe as well that in my own individual capacity, you know, I always tell people, and maybe let me say this in closing, and I think this is something I'm very, very humbled about, because something I believe in. I really think it's always nice to know that if you elect someone in any position, whether in the board or in the country, what does that person stand for? What does the person stand for? It's a fundamental issue. We need to know. As a public, we have the right to know. And I think the SABC is a critical role to play. The SABC can't be biased, can't take one side in the ANC against the other, must treat all the sides fairly, everybody must be heard. And in fact, if you watch the SABC news today, Honorable Member, you'll recall that the former Deputy President, Jacob Zuma, is almost in all the news bulletins of the SABC. In fact, I think they cover him more than they cover the leader of the opposition. And I would argue that, why can't they cover the leader of the opposition person there? Also, I would like the leader of the opposition every week. I would like to listen to her. I want to see what she stands for. So, as an individual, I've got a right to that. So, I really firmly believe that the public broadcaster must do all these sorts of things, because I really believe that this country is a great country. This country has got a great future. But those of us who are young, who have got another 30 or 20 years to live, have got to protect the savings of that constitution of 1990, the covenant of 1990. We've got to protect it. We've got to preserve it. And we can do so if we act with integrity, if we act with fairness, if there is unity of purpose, and if we speak our mind. There's notion about people not speaking their mind. I don't understand it. I really speak my mind. And I believe that if I were to go to the SABC board, I would continue to do so. I've done that all my life. Thank you very much, Chair. It has been humbling to come in front of the committee.
I want to thank you for your foresight.
I think you've covered that ground. And when you spoke about Mr. Bukele as well, I saw the Honorable Member nodding.
Of course.
And among the ANC members as well, if you speak about the head of the state. So I think you've covered all that. I'm only glad that you I will engage you on after the meeting or when you are a board member or not. Because you like engagement. But the issues that you raised, it was raised by another photographic interview as well, saying we need more business on the FAQ. So it's fine. It's fine. You know, I've got a trade union background. In my previous life, I was a deputy president of the country. I'm sharing this with a good time. You're aware. So I've always been looking at the way the country is. When we drafted the reconstruction and development program, part of the things that we demand was this question that says labor issues in the country are not I'll put somewhere there an economic study. That's a sub text, you know, economic study. And the RDP and Trent, that's the thing about actually expose. And then the country know, the children know about the struggles and the issues related to labor matters in the country. So you have to balance that, unfortunately. That's the one thing. And the other matter that you've raised that I think is very critical is the question about the development of poverty line, particularly the 5% in income line from the Northern Cape. So I come from the Northern Cape, so you put just on this one. And about the Ukapi, and I think in Botswana they also have a program called Mukaraha. Mukaraha. Very popular in these nations, which are really indigenous problems that people have. So thanks for that insight, and good luck. We will obviously we'll always see progress as we go. These programs are quite open. You are at liberty to join us for lunch, if you so wish. Lunch will be honorable members of the assembly, all of us, and our guests who are here. So please let's go for lunch. We'll be back here by 4.